Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. And I'd love to do a shout out to all our listeners, and we're so happy to have you downloading our shows right here at Progressive Radio Network. And we have ongoing classes all over the country. And the best way to find out about them is to go to naturalnurse.com and then go to the calendar. Also, while you're there on the front of the page, you can just put your email in at the very bottom left-hand corner, just your email, no other questions, and then you'll be on our email list. But we only send out emails occasionally. We don't bombard people with it. However, we do update our class calendar all the time. And we also have lots of individual classes. People are studying with us for lots of things. For instance, aromatherapy and essential oils, herbal medicine, nutrition. People are taking classes to become an RH. An RH is a registered herbalist. Or to take the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course, or to find out about leaky gut syndrome. All of these things are available and have CE credits. CE credits involve professional certificates for professions such as chiropractors, nurses, massage therapists, acupuncturists, nurse practitioners. All of those professions can get CE credits by taking our classes. And if you don't need CE credits, that's fine too. You can just study with us for your own information or to work towards a certificate such as an RH, Registered Herbalist Certificate. So lots of opportunities. For instance, we have a class coming up in a few days, which are called Herbs for the Holy Days or Herbs for the Spiritual Season. What we're talking about there is three CEUs for massage therapists, dietitians, RDs, registered nurses, nurse practitioners, midwives, and anyone can take it. What this class is about is that throughout history, plants have been used by civilizations around the world for food, medicine, tools, household implements, and spiritual ritual. So what we're going to talk about in that class is from the Old and New Testament, the use of specific medicinal plants, both for sort of spiritual reasons, you know, even in Judaism they have Havdalah, and in Catholicism they have the use of herbs, and in Hindi and in Buddhism and, you know, the Muslim tradition, everybody has the use of herbs in a spiritual tradition. So we're going to talk about the magic use and also the medicinal use of many of those herbs. And that that course is actually on sale for early bird registration right now. All you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com, click on the Herbs for the Holy Days, and look for the registration link. And it will take you right to where you can register for that class. And you will learn a lot about what goes on all over the world and in your house in terms of the use of herbs for our current spiritual season. So we have ongoing classes and workshops as well as private classes and workshops. And those are every single day. I would say that's a big part of what I do. And then, of course, we have our radio shows. I'm here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can always listen in because they are archived. That's one of the fantastic things about Progressive Radio Network. So you can get in touch with us, and we'd love to have you. Now, today, we're going to bring on board our guest. And our guest is Dr. Eric Kaplan. And Dr. Kaplan has lots of letters after his name, including being a chiropractic physician. And he received a BS in human biology at Emory University. And he went to Palmer College of Chiropractic. So did my sister. And in addition, he is a board-certified chiropractic neurologist with over 1,500 hours of postgraduate study, including movement disorder, vestibular rehabilitation, and childhood developmental delays. His latest accomplishment is completing two fellowships through the American College of Functional Neurology. So he is a board-certified functional neurologist and a fellow of the American Board of Vestibular Rehab. Being trained in dozens of neurological techniques, he can treat many different kinds of patients. And his office is right in New York. The phone number is 212-620-8120. And he also has an office in New Jersey. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Kaplan.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Now, in addition, is there an online place that people can find you? Is there a Facebook or online website?
Yeah, so the website is kaplandc.com, and the phone number is 212-620-8121, or you can even email me at info@kaplanbrainandbody.com.
Well, thank you so much. So you're a chiropractor, but you've gone beyond that to have a lot of really specific and specialized areas of expertise. For those of our listeners who might not know what this means, what is vestibular? Where do we focus in that?
So the vestibular system can be a wide variety of patients. One of the most common ones is dizziness. So people get a lot of dizziness or lightheadedness or brain fog, or sometimes when you get up too quickly, you kind of like lose your balance a little bit. People who walk awkwardly, sometimes they trip over things or bump into things. People with eye problems, difficulty reading. And then there's people who have ringing in the ears, which can be very annoying as well. So it covers a wide variety range of topics and different conditions.
So for people who might have something like ongoing dizziness, or, you know, those also linked to various inner ear infections, or right. It can go on a longer period of time?
Yeah, so with dizziness and inner ear, there could be a lot going on. There's something called canals in your ears. And one of the most common dizziness patients we see is called BPPV. And these little crystals break off in the canals, and it makes you feel like you're spinning. So this is when somebody turns over in bed and they get dizzy. That's the most common time that happens. And it's pretty easy to fix, where we do what's called an Epley's maneuver, where we tilt their head back in a certain position and tilt the crystals out of the canal into a problem area where they won't cause the vertigo anymore. And that's pretty usually just one day to fix. Then there's another condition called POTS. So POTS is the one where people get up quickly and they get dizziness. So for that, we have to do different treatments where we lie them down and then we gradually raise the table up, improving blood flow into the brain because they're not getting enough oxygen into the brain. And then for other dizziness ones, we have to do some eye exercises or some breathing exercises. Each one requires a different type of treatment. So the best thing about the functional neurology practice is that you don't just give a pill to treat the dizziness. You figure out where the dizziness is coming from and then give the individualized treatment to get rid of that specific type of dizziness.
So, you know, that is so much more complex and also usually a lot more effective than, what would be done in conventional medicine for dizziness?
Antivert, it's called. It's just a medication they give.
And that's not going to stop what's causing it.
Right, exactly. So we like to get to the root cause of it so you don't have to treat the symptoms. And then sometimes it's a quick, easy fix where you just get rid of the cause and that's it. And you never have to take any medicine ever again.
And that's why what you do is called functional, because it's about what's going on with that person.
Exactly. It's what's functioning. It's not treating the symptoms, but why isn't the brain functioning properly?
And I know if someone does come to your office, and I want to remind our listeners, we're talking here to Dr. Eric Kaplan, and he does have offices both in New York and New Jersey. You can find him at Kaplan, kaplan.dc.com. When someone comes into you, Dr. Kaplan, I'm sure it's not. I mean, when you go to a doctor for dizziness, this is what I see happen. As a nurse, I see this all the time. Right. Doctors are not looking at patients anymore. They are not touching them. They are not smelling them. They are looking at them over their shoulder. The patient is on the table and the doctor is by the computer trying to find the correct code that would link to dizziness so he can put in something for billing. And by the time he finds that, he or she, the 8 minutes they have is over. They scribble something on a pad and leave. It's very unfortunate, but that is very often the case.
Yeah, it can be frustrating as a patient to experience that, and you're going to this expert and you want answers, and unfortunately a lot of patients leave not getting what they came in for.
So how would that differ if someone came in, since we're talking about dizziness, to you? What would that visit look like?
Well, usually the first thing we'll do with dizziness is do what's called a VNG, video nystagmography, where we put these goggles on them and they watch this light, and there's infrared cameras that measure how the brain is functioning. And you could actually find what area of the brain is dysfunctional by doing this test.
That's interesting. I never heard of that at all. That's why
no
I love learning things.
Yeah, there's no radiation, there's no side effects. It literally measures your eye movements. So different eye movements correlate to different areas of the brain. For example, when you do a quick eye movement, that is activating your frontal cortex. So when we have patients who have a poor frontal cortex, like with ADD or with depression or anxiety, their saccades, which are these fast eye movements, will show up abnormal on the VNG test.
What is that called? VNG?
VN, like Nancy, video nystagmography.
Test.
Or some people call it a VOG, video oculography.
I bet you can't just walk in anywhere and get that. I have never heard of it. Let me tell you, I've been doing this a long time, and I always learn new things. So I want to thank you so much for that, because you are a specialist in this. Now, wouldn't that be a good test sort of for everyone to get, to find out where weakness in their brain it might be?
Yes, exactly. So I'm trying to actually promote this from children on, actually, to get baseline testing and see how your brain is functioning. So let's say you do get some sort of injury, you get a concussion, you get a car accident, whatever it may be, you know, you've already had your brain tested, so you have the baseline, and then you could figure out exactly what area has been damaged the most, and then you could focus your treatment on improving that weak area.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. I think it should be added to, you know, baseline, because so many people have learning disabilities that they don't even know about. And I know chiropractic neurologists for years have been looking at that association between the brain communicating with different areas.
Exactly. That is true.
So, and what kind of outcome then would you do differently depending on your results?
So let's say if it was, we'll go back to the frontal cortex example. Let's say if they have abnormal fast eye movements, so we want to stimulate the frontal cortex, we use the neuroscience. And the neuroscience has proven that tapping your fingers over and over again will stimulate the frontal cortex. Also, neuroscience has shown that smell, the olfactory nerve, goes directly into the frontal cortex. So, in fact, smell is one of the first tests we do to figure out if there's going to be a future problem in that frontal cortex, which could lead to Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease. So the smell is one of the first things to go, you know, 40 years before you even get a tremor or memory loss. So the smell is very important. That goes right into the frontal cortex. And then the quick eye movement. So I might have a patient do finger tapping, smell, and a quick eye movement all at the same time to bombard that frontal cortex and get exponential growth to make it fire using a process called neuroplasticity. So we're activating all that area and giving it a lot of oxygen and blood flow and make it stronger. Just like a muscle, you can make your brain stronger too.
So I imagine you might know Dr. Robert Melillo.
Yeah, well, I studied under him for the Childhood Developmental Delay Fellowship Program. And so he's taught me a lot as far as working with primitive reflexes. So that's one of the first things we do with autistic kids is look at their primitive reflexes. So most people are just doing speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. But what they're missing, and the first most important thing with autistic kids or ADD or Tourette's, stuff like that, is to look at primitive reflexes. So that's the biggest thing that Dr. Melillo has taught me. And I've been doing a lot of these intensive therapies where we do these remediation exercises for these primitive reflexes so their brains can develop, and actually we get, you know, autistic kids speaking very quickly.
And I have seen that happen. I really have. It was amazing to me, and this is a lot of years ago, over 20, when I watched him actually working with some kids, and they'd come in the next week. I mean, you would hardly, would be a completely different person that quickly.
Different kids. So, you know, and I tell the parents that originally, I say, you know, and they're going to fall asleep for the first time. And I'm saying, and I tell the parents, listen, your kid's going to fall asleep for the first time. They're not dead. Don't worry. Just let them sleep. And even though I tell them, the mothers always go back, and they're like, I didn't know what was wrong. They were sleeping. I'm like, I told you that was going to happen, but they still can't believe it that it happens that quickly. But the key is to do these intensive therapies, which very few doctors do. Where they're in my office for 4 hours straight, and we do, you know, like 20-minute exercise and then rest. 20-minute exercise, rest. 20-minute exercise, rest. So we do over and over and over again. That's how you change the brain. That's neuroplasticity. You got to do things over and over to create a long-lasting change.
So, you know, this should be standard of practice, in my opinion, because what are the negative effects of trying a therapy like that?
Well, that's the greatest thing. There's just no side effects.
There's no negative effects. So maybe it doesn't work occasionally, but I would say every time I've seen it, it's worked to some extent, sometimes tremendously, and there's no downside to trying it.
Right. It's not like harmful, you know, pharmaceuticals or surgeries, which can be very risky. So, you know, you always want to do the non-invasive, least risky procedure first.
I would say that that's a pretty wise decision. Yeah. So people come to your office for all different reasons, it sounds like. You know, we've talked only so far about dizziness and then, you know, looking at children, which of course, would you say that that's a large part of your practice is working with children?
You know, we're all over the board. I see from literally from 0 to over 100. So it's pretty well spread out. Which is, you know, very exciting for me because, you know, I get to see such a wide variety of patients, but that's what happens as a functional neurologist because your brain controls everything. And in my opinion, every doctor needs to be a functional neurologist. So if you're a cardiologist and you're an expert in the heart and you're looking at people's blood pressure, what controls the blood pressure is your brain. What controls your pulse rate is your brain. So if you're a cardiologist, you have to be a functional neurologist as well. If you're a gastroenterologist, you know, what controls your digestion is your brain. You know, I get a lot of issues with the vagus nerve. Have you heard of the vagus nerve?
I have, but please explain to our listeners.
Yeah, so the vagus nerve is, you know, it's the most researched nerve most recently because it's helping every condition because the vagus nerve, which means wandering nerve, it starts from the oldest part of our brain called your brain stem, and it controls everything. It controls your heart. It controls your lungs, your respiration. It controls your digestion, your liver. It controls your bladder. It controls your hormones, your sex organs. It literally controls everything. It's the most important nerve in the entire body. So if you can make the vagus nerve and what's called your autonomic nervous system work at optimal levels. So the autonomic is like automatic, the things we don't think about. So all the stuff that we don't think about, we need to be functioning at optimal levels. So many people come to me with all different issues, but it actually stems from one nerve, which is this vagus nerve. So when we help with the vagus nerve, we help people with breathing problems, with energy problems, with adrenal problems, with thyroid problems, with digestive problems, with heart problems, you know, problems getting pregnant and hormonal problems. And, you know, the list goes on and on, but just all coming from this one nerve, just fantastic.
So it is interesting in terms of herbal medicine that we know that bitters, having a bitter flavor, either an herb or, you know, something like arugula that people eat, when you chew on that, it actually stimulates that same nerve to release digestive hormones. And that's why bitters are so excellent for digestion.
That's right. And to use the neurology part of that, I love how you just said that. So bitter correlates to cranial nerve 9, which is called the glossopharyngeal nerve. And bitter is sensitive to this glossopharyngeal nerve. The key, though, is to get it on the back of the tongue. Because if it's at the front of the tongue, it's not going to get that cranial nerve 9. So the bitter has to be the back of the tongue. So when we use bitter, we always use it in the back of the tongue.
Now, what about getting people to do that? Because, you know, bitter is a flavor that is not part of the SAD, Standard American Diet.
Well, no, what we do is actually just stimulate it by placing it, like using a dropper and putting it on the back of the tongue.
Ah, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it does a brain therapy.
So and what would you use? What kind of bitter would you use for that?
You could use, you know, the coffee grinds or chocolate or, you know, like you said, arugula or something like that.
Oh, try Golden Seal if you want the real bitter. Anyone can do puppies, that's funny. Golden Seal is the ultimate bitter because of that yellow berberine molecule, which is extreme in bitterness. Not everyone can handle it. I personally love it. But that's very interesting what you said.
I have to use that in my practice now.
So even people probably, if it is something like, you know, it's common with Italians, by the way, to where they're eating a bitter salad, like I mentioned, arugula, with the meal. And, of course, when they swallow it, it does pass by the back of the tongue. So that's really fascinating.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Putting the two worlds together. I love it. You can always apply neurology to any type of practice, you know, including, you know, herbology or even medicine or acupuncture, whatever it is. You can always incorporate the neurology.
Well, right. And so it really should be, I hope that at some point, this kind of medicine, really, it is the reason we want to have it as primary care, first line standard of practice, is because it really makes so much more sense. It's so much better than getting surgery for your inner ear, let's say, when you could have had the kind of therapies you do, which are more effective and less invasive. So it really should be the way medicine is practiced.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, as, you know, shows like yourself get out, like, you know, more and more it's going that way. So I think we're going in a good direction where people are more, you know, willing to look at the alternative because they're just not getting the results the way they've been doing it, going the modern medicine route. So, you know, you can't argue with the results. And when people, you know, have the opportunity through the internet to share their stories, you know, you can't silence it forever. So the news is getting out there and people are understanding that there are other ways. So I'm glad that you're helping spread the good word.
So Dr. Kaplan, would you say that many times people do come to you as a last resort after they tried some of the more toxic and more invasive techniques?
Yes, I would say that's definitely the more common case where people, and I'll get the worst of the worst, where literally patients will say, I've seen over 100 doctors, I've spent $100,000, you know, I've tried everything and everyone, you're my last resort. I hear that story more than anything. So to give people their life back after they've been through such travesty is the best feeling in the world. So I'm so happy that I'm able to, you know, solve the solutions to these health conditions that no one's been able to help with. So I feel blessed to be able to do that, even though in my mind, I wish people did more, you know, preventative. I do like the fact where, you know, I'm able to help people that no one else has been able to help.
That is fulfilling. So we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com, and we'll be right back with more with our guest, Dr. Eric Kaplan. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can visit us at naturalnurse.com and go to calendar to find out all the classes and workshops that we're giving in online as well as in person. And many of them have 3 CE credits. Some have 18 CE credits for healthcare providers, but you can take it anyway. You don't have to have any kind of license to learn how to use all of these natural techniques for yourself and your family. And that's one of the reasons that we do our show right here on Progressive Radio Network, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and why we feature such wonderful guests like the person that we're speaking to today, Dr. Eric Kaplan, who is a chiropractic neurologist, and you can find him at Kaplan, K kaplandc.com, or call his New York number 212-620-8121, or his New Jersey number 201-261-2150. By the way, we will have all this posted on our archives, and Dr. Kaplan, I will send you a link to our archived show that you can share as well. Right now we're on live. So Dr. Kaplan, I have a question for you. This, I don't know if you have an answer to it. It's a challenging one. And this is with patients who have a very severe, intense condition called trigeminal neuralgia, which seems to be unremitting and really devastating, to where they often get surgery as the only answer. What would you do for someone like that?
Well, first of all, a lot of patients are misdiagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia. So I get a lot of, you know, because again, I'm always the last resort. So a lot of patients come to me and they say, oh, it's trigeminal neuralgia, and it's not. So sometimes it's misdiagnosed. Trigeminal neuralgia is probably the worst neurologic condition you could ever have.
Unfortunately,
so it's actually like suicidal, where people, they can't even wear glasses, they can't wear earrings, you know, they can't, if it's a guy, they can't shave, they can't brush their hair, you know, it's really intense pain. So sometimes it's overdiagnosed. When you get the really severe ones, those are really tough. Usually the medical route is Tegretol, and Tegretol is will kill you. I mean, it damages the liver, and it's one of the most intense drugs, but that's because this is one of the most intense neurologic conditions. So it's a very tough one.
I was told this. I would like your opinion about this. I was told, because I have a patient that's having this issue right now, that Tegretol, the doctor did suggest it, and he mentioned that it's actually partially diagnostic. Like, if it works, that often points to the fact that it is trigeminal neuralgia.
Yeah, doctors use that method all the time. You know, they'll give Parkinson's medication. If the tremor goes away, they say, oh, it's Parkinson's. You know,
okay.
So it is. A lot of medications are diagnostic. If it helps, then they know, okay, that's what it is. So,
but it's still not the answer, because you can't stay on that drug.
That's not the answer. So, but you got to figure out what's the issue there. So there could be multiple issues. It's not just the condition, the name of the condition that's important, but it's why it's happening to begin with. I'm not really a big, I don't really care what we call it. The key is what's happening. And why is the nervous system dysfunctioning? Why is this person in pain? You know, what is going on? Is it a misalignment of the jaw? Is it you're not getting blood flow to the nerve? Is it there is an infection in your tooth? Is it a brain-based issue where you have this hypersensitivity? You know, so there's all different reasons you could have trigeminal neuralgia. So what we'd like to do is figure out which of those is it. And then after we figure out which is causing that patient-specific trigeminal neuralgia, then we take the appropriate measures, because each of the seven different scenarios it could be will require seven different types of solutions.
So you are saying that that is a pretty difficult situation. Do you feel sometimes, you know, if all else fails, that having that trigeminal nerve severed would be the answer?
I never try to go to that point. I mean,
okay.
I haven't seen too many patients coming back saying, oh, I've done this surgery and it's fixed everything. So, but, you know, that's just hearsay. So I don't know what the actual research has shown. So, you know, if there's something that I'm not sure about the research, I never suggest it. So,
So you have shared with us that is kind of a really end stage kind of situation. It's really rough. I mean, I know patients who it's excruciating suffering, and it's so sad. And then I have people who just the chiropractic adjustment seems to have helped that condition. So it probably wasn't that bad.
Right. You got to get to the root cause of it. If it's just there's a misalignment, you know, then you got to take care of the misalignment. If it has to do with the brain, you got to take care of the brain. If it has to do with the blood flow, you got to take care of the blood flow. If there's an infection, you got to take care. So it all depends on, you know, what's causing it. And then you get to the root cause, then you know how to fix it.
Well, let's talk about your book, Boost Your Brain Power, because you must be bringing a lot of this information into your new book, Boost Your Brain Power.
Yes, definitely. So I try to, you know, cover a wide variety of topics, but, you know, the most common, you know, question I get is how can I improve my memory and my focus? So I always get that question. So I'm like, I have to, you know, write this book and, you know, so everyone has a guide where they could just follow these rules and get results in, you know, less than 6 weeks, usually, if you follow all the 17 ways to boost your brain power.
Okay. Do you want to share some of those with us?
Sure. So, you know, there's a lot of just common chapters like nutrition, for instance. You know, we go over the most common foods to avoid that cause inflammation in the brain. The most common are dairy products. So a lot of patients come to me and say they, you know, drink milk. They think it's good for their bones and they need their calcium. But that is just the dairy industry marketing. So it's not true that calcium improves by drinking more milk or that you're not going to get osteoporosis if you drink milk, but it does been proven that it will cause inflammation in your brain. So, and it can affect, even it's been linked to Parkinson's. A Harvard study came out, I think it was 2 years ago, that showed a link between dairy and Parkinson's disease. So, you know, dairy is one of the most inflammatory foods you can have. And it's very simple. It's just that we're not cows. So cow's milk is made for the baby calves and human milk is made for baby humans. And, you know, we're the only species on the planet that drinks another species' milk. There's plenty of animals that eat meat, and there's plenty of animals that have fish, and there's plenty of animals that eat eggs, and there's plenty of animals that eat fruit and vegetables and nuts and seeds, but there's not any animal on the planet that would have another species' milk. It's just the dairy industry trying to sell their product, but it's causing a lot of dysfunction in our brain and in our lungs. Actually, quitting milk is what got me onto this road of health and well-being.
You mean for yourself?
For myself, yeah.
I was a very sick child.
Yeah, I was a very sick child. I had, there was a smoker in my house. I would grow up coughing and mucus every single day of my life. And I was miserable. You know, I was overweight. I had bad acne. I had low energy. I was not a very good student. I wasn't good in sports. So I wasn't very happy, you know, as a young teenager, especially that, you know, kids could be very cruel at that age. So I wanted to change my life. When I went to the pediatrician, their solution was because I had chronic bronchitis, I was supposed to take steroids and antibiotics, but the medication made me very sick. And I used to literally throw up from the medication, sometimes 10 to 20 times a day. That many times I would actually throw up from the medicine. So I said, I can't live like this. So my dad took me to a natural seminar. It's called Natural Hygiene. And they were teaching me about dairy products causing congestion in the lungs. So I quit dairy immediately. And within a month, my bronchitis was gone. And I got off the steroids and I got off the antibiotics, and I said, wow, at 13 years old, if I could cure myself and I knew more than my own pediatrician, that I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to help people in a natural way without using medication by starting to improve their diet. And so I started preaching, you know, really healthy eating as a teenager. And then as I was going to seminars, I met all these chiropractors at the seminars who were also into natural health. So I said, okay, I'll be a chiropractor. And then in my first month of chiropractic school, I went to this seminar by Dr. Carrick, who's my mentor, and he's the father of functional neurology. So in my first quarter of chiropractic school, I found functional neurology. And at that point, I knew that I wanted to be an expert in the brain. So that was back in 2000. So it's almost 20 years now that I've been studying neurology and the brain, and it all started from quitting milk.
What a great personal story. That is so often the case, that people who became natural healthcare providers did not do that because they were drawn towards how can I make the most money in life, but because they had a personal experience, either themselves or a close loved one, who was kind of written off or suffering while they were using conventional therapies, and then they found a total cure through natural. So they said, you know what, this is it. And I personally had a similar experience myself and have been doing it actually since 1964, a little bit longer than you, Dr. Kaplan. Wow. But nonetheless, there's more to learn because you have taught me a lot of things that I never knew. I'm certainly not a brain specialist like you are. It's really fascinating new testing techniques they have. So what are some of the other easy ways that people can boost their brain power? And would you say that's mostly in more of an older population like my age?
Well, no, I like to start younger. The younger, the better. And I have lots of, you know, younger children, and the parents want them to perform better at school, or, you know, they're getting ready for the SATs or whatever it may be. So it doesn't, you don't want to wait till the memory starts getting bad to start working on it. It's all about prevention. So, you know, we don't, you know, like to use the word Alzheimer's. We just like to say we want to boost your brain power. So we don't want to, you know, treat dementia. We're just improving memory, and everybody's memory can improve, whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, doesn't matter how old you get. You can always boost your brain power. You could always improve your memory. But what I always tell my patients is it's work. So if you don't do anything and you sit on the couch and you watch Netflix all day, your brain is just going to get worse and worse and worse. So if you do the right things, you know, which is covered all in the book, then your brain will improve. In 2020, your memory will be better than 2019. It doesn't matter how old you are. So it doesn't matter how old you are, you can always improve your memory.
Well, that's encouraging, because certainly when people are older, even if it is not all the way to dementia or all the way to Alzheimer's, those are pretty, you know, moving towards more end stage. I would certainly say my experience with older people is that there is something called the senior moment, where even if you were very sharp before, you can see that right answer and it doesn't get out your mouth. It's like you're looking for it. And it's mild, but I wonder if something like what you're talking about can help with that, which is just a sudden, slow and minor memory loss that seems to happen with age.
Yeah, well, I never like to say that it happens with age, because that's not true, because your memory can improve with age, but you got to put in the work. So what happens is the younger people are just using their brain more. So it's not has to do with age. It has to do with habit. So as long as you have the young person's habits, your memory will keep on improving. But what we don't want to do is, and this is part of, and this is in the book, is you have to do new things. So a lot of people, as they get older, you know, it's the same Monday, it's the same Tuesday, it's the same Wednesday. Every day, it's just over and over and over and over again. It's repeated. And the brain hates that. The brain wants new things every day. So you have to do something every day that you've never done before.
To increase the pathways in the brain.
Yeah, to increase those synapses, those connections. It's to when you look at a functional MRI and you look at a child's brain, it's on fire. It's got yellow and orange and red. If you look at, you know, a 65-year-old brain, it looks black. Like, it doesn't even look like the person's alive, because they're never stimulating it. If they're doing the same thing every week, it doesn't have to work. So we have to challenge it and do new things every day. And so some of my patients will say, oh, I do the crossword puzzle every day. I said, that's not good. You're doing the same thing every day. So do the crossword puzzle on Monday, do the Sudoku on Tuesday, do the maze on Wednesday, the word jumble on Thursday, play Scrabble on Friday. So every day you have to switch up the way you think.
Yeah, and new thought forms. I'll point out my father, who's 94, you know, he just learned how to order things online. I mean, he's always doing something new every day, and he reads very intense books, very highly philosophical books, but he also exercises every day and drives and does everything. So he has no less memory than, you know, 50 years ago.
Right, that's great. And you could take it even a step further. So you drive every day, but you take a different route every day. Okay? Or you read a book every day, but you read a different genre of books every day. You know, you want to take it even to that next level. You exercise every day, but do you switch up the type of exercise? You want to do a bike ride on Monday. You want to do swimming on Tuesday, a dance class on Wednesday. You want to go rollerblading on Thursday. You want to take a hike on Friday. So whatever activity you're doing, switch it up every single day, even within the different activities. The variety is the best thing.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you so much, Doctor. So we're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Our guest today is Dr. Eric Kaplan. You can find him and his excellent information at kaplandc.com, as well as his book, Boost Your Brain Power. And we're going to hear a little bit from our station here, Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Dr. Eric Kaplan. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food. And you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Get your daily dose of happy each morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN. LOA Today is expanding to appear on PRN now 5 mornings per week, Monday through Friday. I'm Walt Thiessen, the host of LOA Today. The way you start your day sets the tone for the rest of the day, so start it happy. We explore the realm of positive psychology, the law of attraction, and the power of positive thinking, and we have a heck of a lot of fun in the process. You'll find yourself smiling each morning. That's LOA Today, weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.
Hi, this is Gerald Celente. If you want to stay ahead of the news and on top of the trends, join me every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time here on Progressive Radio Network for Trends This Week,
where you can hear history before it happens.
Known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out.
And we're back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're talking today with our guest, Dr. Eric Kaplan, who is a chiropractor as well as being a member of a lot of organizations. He is a chiropractic neurologist, and he does functional neurology, where he will find out why whatever is going on with you is, and then work with you with his long level of expertise to bring it back into balance. But like he has been pointing out, it's not so much just what Dr. Kaplan can do for you, but Dr. Kaplan will help educate you in terms of how you can help yourself. It does come down to you taking action. And in his book, Boost Your Brain Power, he guides you about improving memory and focus. And Dr. Kaplan, what are some of the important foods that people may really want to focus on to boost their brain power?
Well, the key to get all these nutrients in your brain is to eat the rainbow. So you want to eat each color every single day. So you want to eat something that's red. So you have, you know, a red strawberry and then an orange carrot and a yellow banana and green broccoli and purple blueberries, you know, and so on and so forth. So as long as you eat each color of the rainbow, you're going to give the brain all the nutrients that it needs.
So do you believe in also perhaps measuring nutrient levels and supplementing where necessary?
So what we could do is you analyze your blood work and you look at all the levels. So for instance, a lot of people take multivitamins, but they're not deficient in all those vitamins. So it doesn't make sense. So supplements are very dangerous, just like medicine can be dangerous.
Tell us why. That's a great statement.
Yeah, because people will just take it because they think it's good for you. And first of all, you have to look at the quality of your product. So, you know, I always treat my patients like I treat my family. So I would never buy vitamins from CVS or, you know, Vitamin Shop or GNC, even Whole Foods. You know, I don't want to buy these mass-produced vitamins. You want to produce high, you want to only, you know, invest in high-quality supplements because most of the time they don't even get absorbed. So you're just wasting your time and your money. And if you actually are not deficient in the vitamin, they become toxic. You know, we were talking about milk before and how people say, oh, you need to drink the milk for calcium. And then I get these other people that say, oh, well, I don't drink milk, so now I'm going to take calcium pills. That's the worst thing to do. Because if you have normal calcium levels, as most people do, and you take calcium pills, it's going to deposit it somewhere. It might deposit it in the heart and cause some heart disease. It might deposit it in your brain and cause brain disease or lung cancer. Or calcium supplements, you know, have been linked to lots of horrible conditions. So we have to be very careful with taking supplements. So you're not going to take calcium because you have osteoporosis. You're not going to take it because you are in menopause. You're not going to take it because you don't drink milk. The only reason you would ever take it is if you're actually super deficient in calcium. And the only way to measure that is through blood work. Most people aren't calcium deficient. Most people are vitamin D deficient.
That's true. And, you know, what you're saying is very true, Dr. Kaplan. There has been a lot of really well-done studies looking at the link between calcium supplements, particularly you want to use look at the form as well, because many of those were done on calcium carbonate and the fact that they do get deposited and cause more problems than they help because it's not absorbed anyway at the cellular level where you need the molecular calcium that you would get from many foods. So what kind of foods would you suggest eating more of?
Well, for what purpose? So we, if you're looking at the blood
Great
work.
Question.
Right. If you're looking at the blood work and all your nutrients are good because, you know, you colored the rainbow, then you're good to go. You know, if your iron's low, you know, do we want to have liver and red meat or lots of spinach? I don't know. Why is the iron low? A lot of times the iron's low because you don't have enough stomach acid. So I could look at somebody's blood work and determine whether they're producing enough stomach acid. So a lot of times you can get rid of anemia, not even by working on supplementing with iron, but actually changing the stomach acid so that they absorb the food that they're eating to begin with. So a lot of times it's absorption issues. It's not deficiency issues.
I actually have my clients do that rainbow. How they do that is they take around with them as a little assignment blank index cards and colored markers. And every time they put something in their mouth, they put a mark on the blank index card of the color of the food they ate. And their homework is each day to create a rainbow, like you said. And
Beautiful.
That works really well. I've seen it work great with children also. But I have to say one thing that I had a patient, well, a client, he's a guy. He came in and said, well, I ate Skittles every day.
Yeah.
So he was able to fill out that rainbow.
Do not count.
Right. So who are we kidding? But in general, it's really fun to challenge yourself that way. Because if you're eating only really processed foods, you're only going to get brown and white. You're not going to get all those colors.
Exactly.
So what is the relationship between water and brain health?
Yeah, so, you know, think about it like this. What happens if a grape is dehydrated?
It becomes a raisin.
Right, it shrivels up. That same exact thing happens in your brain. If your brain's dehydrated, it's going to shrivel up and it's going to shrink. And it's not going to function properly. So the proper amount of water to drink is half your body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 100 pounds, you have to drink 50 ounces of water. You weigh 200 pounds, you got to drink 100 ounces of water. And the important times to drink water is vital to your health as well. So you want to drink it right in the morning, and then you want to drink it a half hour before each meal. So a half hour before lunch, half hour before dinner, breakfast, literally every single meal, half hour, you want to drink water. That helps to help with the digestive process, lubricates the intestinal wall before you start eating. Very important for the brain function as well. So you don't want to drink after you eat. You want to drink before you eat. And then you also want to drink at nighttime as well. So you just do the math for yourself to figure out how many ounces of each glass. But you want to do morning, half hour before each meal, and then one at night.
Well, that is such great information, and I want to thank you so much for writing your book so people can get a hold of it, Boost Your Brain Power, A Guide to Improving Memory and Focus. You can find it on Amazon. And Dr. Kaplan, just tell us one more time how people might get in touch with you.
So you can email me at info@kaplanbrainandbody.com, or you can go to my website, kaplandc.com. Or you can call us at the office, 212-620-8121, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have. And I'm also actually offering to any of your listeners a free evaluation using that VNG that I was talking about that measures your eye movements. Normally $300, but I'm going to do a special for any of your listeners. They just email us or come to our call us website, and they can get a free VNG so we can measure each lobe of their brain and let them know how it's functioning.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to take you up on that. I'm
yes,
going to call your office, but it's going to have to be in like May or June when I'm in your
That's
area because I'm in Florida for the winter.
Just invite
Thank
me
you
there.
So much. That is great. Thank you so much, Dr. Kaplan. That was a wonderful show full of really interesting information. I'm happy you put it all in a book so people can access it that way as well, Boost Your Brain Power. And we're signing off here. I want to thank you so much, listeners, for joining us each week right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, you can find us at naturalnurse.com. And this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.